You're listening to an encore presentation of the Weekend Real Estate Report.
You're listening to the Weekend Real Estate Report on 105.7 The Fan.
You do a great job here, giving the audience quite a bit of information. For a lot of guys like me, I'm sure a lot of females have certainly been enlightened and informed to help their life a little bit better. So keep up the good work.
Once again, Carl Delmont.
All right, we're back. Carl Delmont here with you in the Weekend Real Estate Report. Once again, we're deviating a little bit from the normal show where we talk about economics and housing and lending. And we're actually talking today to Steve Ford, and he's got some great stories. He talked about his dad's presidency, his legacy. We actually talked about Steve's career going from walking away, I think 2 weeks away from starting Duke, to becoming a star, and then becoming a soap opera star for many years, and then moving into movies, including When Harry Met Sally, Black Hawk Down, Contact with Jodie Foster, a bunch of others. But just an interesting, very interesting life, and a very, well-rounded life. But, you know, we'd be remiss if we only spoke about your dad, who did many great things. Of course, yourself. We need to finish up here, and please, let's talk about your mom.
Well, you can't not talk about Dad's presidency and not talk about Mom. She was probably his biggest asset when he was running for election. He didn't get elected the first time against Carter. The most popular button was Betty's husband for president. So she was an icon already, and Mom just blossomed when Dad became president. It was interesting. I mean, she's the one that really raised us kids most of the time, Carl. Dad was on the road a lot, 150 days a year, and you know, Mom was the one that drove us around, got us to football practice and the dentist and all those kind of things. So when he became president, it was really neat to see Mom blossom. And the first thing that happened within the first 30 days of Dad's presidency, besides the pardon, was my mother came down with breast cancer. And you have to remember, in 1974, breast cancer was not something women talked about it publicly. Mm-hmm. In fact, you could not say the word breast on TV. And it was a shameful disease for women. It was a closet disease for women. And I'll never forget Mom and Dad making the decision jointly that they were going to go public with it. She didn't have to. They were going to go public and try to take the shame off that disease. And my parents standing on the front lawn of the White House talking to the press saying, you know, I have breast cancer. I'm going to have a mastectomy. We're going to take the shame off this disease, take it out of the closet for women. And that was a big, big thing for, and I think it endeared Mom to many women in this country. Now, that wasn't the only topic that she also took control of for her own life. Was after they got out of the presidency, when they were living in Palm Springs and building a new home, my mother became addicted to painkillers and alcohol. And again, she rose to the occasion and got sober, got off addiction, for addiction to pain medication and alcohol, and got sober and remained sober and started something called the Betty Ford Center, and again brought awareness to drugs and alcohol in this country. And again, think about it. Back then, the stereotype was the alcoholic was the Skid Row bum.
Mm-hmm.
And here you had this former first lady raise her hand and say, "My name is Betty, I'm an alcoholic." So it really changed the face of alcoholism, and we're very grateful to her legacy. She was a great mother and a great partner for Dad, and she left her legacy may even live longer than Dad's, if you think about it. When we had the panel in Grand Rapids a couple months ago to celebrate Dad's 100th birthday, Ben Stein was on stage, and that was one of the quotes he made. Was we were talking about the Helsinki Accord, which happened when Dad was president, and the Helsinki Accord was basically getting the Russians to acknowledge that human rights existed for the Eastern Bloc nations, Poland and places like that. And that was a huge, huge moment for the start of the crumble of the Soviet Union, for them to acknowledge human rights to those nations that they controlled behind the Iron Curtain. Well, we were talking about the Helsinki Accord, and Secretary Henry Kissinger was elaborating on it and so on and so on. Ben Stein stood up and basically said, listen, 50 years from now, people are not going to remember the Helsinki Accord, but they certainly will remember what Betty Ford, her legacy will be for drugs and alcohol and addiction in this country. So, yeah, her legacy may outlast dads in some way.
Yes, I mean, it's, you know, most people do remember that. Now, is, you know, we think when you mentioned about the breast cancer and how she came out when it was still stigmatized, you know, right now most people just think of Susan Komen as like sort of the name associated with breast cancer and helping cancer or anything else. Does your mom have any type of groups or funding or things of that nature for that? Or is most of the, I guess, legacy from there is going into the rehab center?
You know, at the time, the only organization that existed when Mom came out was the American Cancer Society.
Mm-hmm.
And so a huge amount of dollars went into that right away. Mom later became very good friends with active with the Susan Komen Foundation and because of the work they were doing. But you're right, Mom was one of the first that, again, women actually committed suicide back then before they would admit they were going to have a mastectomy. That's how bad it was. So the shame of that disease was just terrible. All the cards and letters, if Mom were here today, she'd tell you it was all the cards and letters support she got from the women around the country that thanked her, and that really kept her going. And I think the thing I was most proud of was the cards and letters that Dad got. Men that wrote him letters and said, "Dear Mr. President, you know, thank you for showing me how to stand next to my wife." And so that was really cool how they enjoyed that relationship together. As far as the alcoholism went, you know, we saw that building. It was very slow. We saw it building for years. We didn't know what we were looking at, basically. We saw that we were losing our mother. Dad was losing his wife. She was pulling back from her life, canceling appointments, sleeping in later, not participating in life anymore, eventually slurred speech and things like that. But at that time, there was such little education about drugs and alcohol. We didn't know what was happening to Mom. She was basically combining prescription medication, which she legitimately was supposed to have because she had severe pinched nerves in her neck, and combining that with alcohol, it created a sort of a cocktail effect, a heightened effect that caused her to have an addiction that built very slowly. Dad basically just kept searching doctor after doctor to say, what's wrong with my wife? Mom had this secret life that we didn't know about. And finally, he found a doctor that had enough courage to tell him, your wife is an alcoholic, an addict. Doctors weren't trained back then to recognize that, and it was pretty hard to say that about a former first lady.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it the whole area changed, and we did this thing called an intervention with Mom, and at that time, we've never heard that word before. Now you have TV shows about it. So we went and did the intervention, and Dad led it, and he sat there and held Mom's hand and told her he loved her and wanted his wife back. And interventions are pretty hostile things. The person that's going through the intervention is usually not very receptive of it, but we all sat there and let Mom know we love her, and she fought back, but finally the walls came down and she decided that she would check in and give it a shot, and she did all the work after that.
So did she check into like a center in California, and just after she got better, decided she wanted to do her own? Like, were there a lot of centers back then?
There weren't. She went to a naval facility in Long Beach. It was a naval hospital in Long Beach that was, you know, they were doing some of the best work with the military at that point. She went in and spent 30 days in the Long Beach Naval Hospital, and got sober, and it was probably the best thing for her, and changed our families. Now, the crazy thing is that, you know, 10 years after Mom, I too, you would have thought I knew better. But 10 years after Mom, I went through the same thing, alcoholism, and I had to raise my hand and say, my name is Steve, I'm an alcoholic. But again, the grace of God and a good 12-step program, and Mom, I'm, you know, now been sober just going on 20 years.
So. Mm-hmm. Congratulations on that, by the way.
Yeah. Well, I'm able now to go speak to students and prisoners and places like that and try to share it, and someone did it for me, and I've tried to do it for somebody else. But Mom was really the big inspiration for me.
And it's become, you know, I guess Lindsay Lohan, and the list goes all the way back to, you know, all these different people who go there, and it just seems to be the place to go to actually get cured. So you're right. Actually, I mean, there's some great stuff going on with your mom's legacy there.
Well, they've had over 90,000 people go through the Betty Ford Center. It's nonprofit, and so they try to do it in an affordable way with great, you know, they're somewhat the gold standard there. You know, the celebrities that go through there are a fraction of a fraction of a fraction of the patients. They're the ones that get all the press.
Correct.
And they actually don't, you know, they sort of hate that idea because you get what we call, 30-day wonders, people that go in and 30 days later they're back on out and on the cover of People magazine saying, hey, I'm cured, and that's just not the way it works.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's a lifelong thing. And when I got sober, and it's funny, people think I went to the Betty Ford Center, right? And it's not like there's a family wing where I got a family raid or something like that. In fact, I can't go to the Betty Ford Center. They actually have rules. I did mine was outpatient. I went to AA meetings and got sober that way. But it's a lifelong commitment. I kept my mouth shut for 6 or 7 years about my sobriety, and then finally felt like it was secure enough that I'd go speak to students.
Mm-hmm. Now, you're very active in your dad's foundation and overseeing that. Are any of your siblings involved with the Betty Ford Clinic or some other things associated with your family?
Yeah. My sister was chairman of the foundation for Mom's clinic for a while. And so the family was very active. Mom, when she was living, was a chairman of the board, and basically her sobriety, she will tell you, she was against the Betty Ford Center at first. She didn't want to put her name on a clinic. She was afraid that if she failed in her own sobriety, it would, you know, put too much pressure on her. And they finally convinced her to do it. And I think one of the things that really helped her stay sober was the Betty Ford Center was less than a half mile from their home, and she would go over there on a daily basis and teach, meet the new patients, and be part of their sobriety and share her story. And I think it really, really helped Mom with her own sobriety. She was over there every day.
Yeah, that's, again, it's just amazing just looking at your life and your history with not only things your dad's accomplished, your mom's accomplished, and like you said, live on, and your career as well. There's so many great stories. I wish we could, wish we had more time to get through all of them. But I know there's a couple things we can probably finish up with. I know that a lot of people, and even I was in school, people thought that when your dad was president, because he came from Michigan, that he had something to do with Ford, the car maker. And I remember reading a book. I think I shared this with you. I had this book on presidents, and I'm a voracious reader. I just love to read. And I remember reading some of the things about, of course, only one page and he's president, but some of the things about your dad. And one of the things was that he was adopted. And if you want to share that real quickly.
Yeah, and that is a story I share a lot in prisons and juvenile detention facilities, because so many of the young men that are there have come from kind of fatherless homes. And the story about Dad is really one of, it's about his character, not his circumstances. He was born, his original name, he was born in Omaha, Nebraska. His original name was Leslie King,
mm-hmm.
Jr. His father was Leslie King, Sr. And he had a wonderful mother, great mother. But his father, his biological father, was very physically abusive. And Dad's mom, my grandmother, she didn't realize that until the first night of their honeymoon after they got married. Dad's mom was beaten, physically beaten on her honeymoon night. She and her husband, Leslie King Sr., were going up an elevator. Man got on the elevator, tipped his hat at my grandmother, and she acknowledged him, as you would. You know, that's a polite thing to do. And Leslie King Sr., her new husband, thought that she was flirting, and that was the first night she got beat, kicked. Terrible. And the beatings continued for quite a long time. Dad was born about 9 months later, and his name was Leslie King Jr., and like I say, that the life was not very good for his mother. And one night, finally, he came at Grandma, Dad's mom, with a butcher knife, and there were some people there that saved her. She fled in the middle of the night with my dad, who was just a young baby at that time, probably only 6 months old, maybe. She fled in the middle of the night from Omaha, Nebraska, across the river to Council Bluffs, Iowa. She hid out for 2 or 3 days in Council Bluffs until her father could come down on the train from Illinois, pick her up, and take her back to Illinois. She got a divorce. The shame was so great back in this, you know, about 1914. The shame was so great that her dad's family had to sell their business in Illinois, and they moved to Grand Rapids, Michigan, and she took Dad and raised him in Grand Rapids, and she met a man at church, Grace Church in Grand Rapids, Michigan, a man named Gerald R. Ford Sr., and she married him, and he basically took Dad under his wing, and they renamed Dad Gerald R. Ford Jr. And that was a man that invested in Dad's life. That was a guy that made sure he had the right football coach, the right teacher, the right Boy Scout leader, all those kind of things. And it was not his biological father, but a man that chose to love him, that really invested in Dad's life. And so I tell young people, I said, listen, it's your character, not your circumstances, that makes your life. And Dad came from an abusive background, but he with hard work, he went on to become president of the United States. So it's a neat story.
It is. And I think Tip O'Neill's quote that's on the rotunda there couldn't be more appropriate after hearing everything about your dad. And I know listeners will have to agree 100%. I mean, Steve, you got some great stories to tell. And again, I really do appreciate taking the time to come on a show, educate and for lack of a better word, entertain our listeners with the stories that you have. And I'm thankful that we met back in February, and I'm really, really happy that you were able to do this for us. I'm much, much appreciated. I can't thank you enough.
Carl, thank you. I enjoyed my time meeting you and your family, and I hope I know your daughter had a fundraiser going on there for, I think, the soccer team, and so I hope that went well.
We did okay. I mean, we've had some other fundraisers that turned out better, but you know, that was still nice, and actually, the teams are starting up. I'm coaching 3 teams this year, so I'm keeping pretty busy with that. We actually have tournaments this weekend and every weekend actually coming up, but I enjoy it. I mean, it's one of the things you mentioned about your dad's character, having the right coaches and everything else, and you know, I love coaching these kids, and I think, you know, in some way, shape, or form, you're helping maybe help shape some of their character traits down the road.
Well, you're investing in them, and that investment will show up later, so I commend you. You know, when Dad passed away and we went to the state funeral and, you know, all the cannons going off and the flags and everything, I did not remember what he did to get the troops out of Vietnam or, cut inflation or any of those things. That wasn't my memory of Dad. My memory was how great a father he was, how great a husband he was, how he showed us how to be a great husband or a great father. And that's his greatest value to me. Not that he was president, that he was a great father.
Yeah, and again, to your point, you know, for Willis Ward coming up and telling you that story, you know, those are things that you wouldn't have heard otherwise, but it's great to hear other people tell those stories and just reinforce everything that you knew and believed. And again, we're very, very fortunate that he was at that place at that time and things happened the way they did.
Well, thank you. I appreciate it, Carl. I look forward to doing it again with you.
All right. Thanks so much. I'll stay in touch. And once again, thanks for everything and calling in. And I can't thank you enough. So, Steve, thank you for your time, for your stories. And I'll touch base with you probably the next few weeks and just see how things are going. And we'll touch base later on, okay?
Perfect. Have a great day.
You too. Thank you so much. All right, so we just finished up with Steve Ford. I want to thank you guys for listening. And, you know, again, he great stories there. And hopefully that you entertain, you enjoy the show. I know it's a little bit of a departure from our normal programming. But every now and then I run into people who can have great stories like this. And I thought it was worthwhile sharing. So listen, Week in Real Estate Report. And we'll be back next Sunday, as always, 9 to 11. Remember, when the Ravens are playing home, we are on a one-hour show. So keep in mind, if you turn on at the 10 o'clock hour, we're not on. That's why. So anyway, thank you for making us so high-rated here in the Baltimore market. And we're hoping that you enjoy the show. If you need to, go to Week in Real Estate Report website, and it's podcast up there. And again, if you need a quote on a mortgage or for buying a house or refinancing, give us a call at 800-955-8508 or at fremont.com, FREEDMONT.com, NMLS number 1071.